Welcome to Weldcast, a digital project from the High Plains Library District. This project records, documents, and preserves the rich artistic history of Weld County and its residents through storytelling. The stories are stored digitally and are available to all users online at weldcast.com.
This is our main brew house and fermentation area. We brew on a 7-barrel system for our production system.
The voice you are hearing is Kyle Carbaugh, head brewer and co-owner of Wiley Roots Brewing in Greeley. And the noise in the background is the beautiful music of beer being made.
This is a 26-gallon system, so this is our pilot system.
Nice. So this is what you do if you're testing something out to see
exactly
what happens?
Yep.
On this episode of Weldcast, Peter Dirk sits down with Kyle's wife and partner in running the brewery, Miranda Carbaugh, to discuss the origin story behind Wiley Roots. She shares some of the secrets behind their early success at the Great American Beer Festival, and also talks about how operating in Greeley has impacted their business.
Well, let's just start right at the top then. You know, of course, many of us love beer. I know that's a big secret, but you know, not all of us, or not many of us even, really can make a career out of it or do make a career. So tell us about how you started.
So Kyle started brewing in the basement, and you know, I was very supportive of, you know, his hobby, and I'd sample, you know, different things that he brewed at home, and you know, kind of moved, you know, into the kitchen, and he just really seemed to enjoy it and was passionate about it. And for Christmas one year, I made a journal for him. So basically, it was just kind of a list of all the breweries in Colorado. And this was, I think, for 2009. And the goal was to travel to every brewery in Colorado.
Nice.
And so and I volunteered to drive. So basically, that was kind of our goal. And we totally didn't make it. But we hit probably 80 to 85 breweries.
Wow.
And during that year,
wow.
We got to travel all over the state. And, you know, it was just such a great culture. And, you know, during that process, I fell in love with beer. And, you know, I tried everything and just really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And at the end of that year, because of how wonderful everyone was, you know, for the different brewery trips that we went to, we just thought, you know, we have to be a part of this industry in, you know, some capacity, and hoped that, you know, we could make good enough beer to start our own.
So it was a combination of something that you guys kind of got into, but then also seeing how great that community was. Is that
definitely
that prompted a lot of it?
Definitely. You know, I can remember, you know, we went down 285 and went all the way down to Cortez and went back up to Grand Junction and came back over, you know.
Yeah.
There were a couple, you know, day trips, weekend trips. And we had some favorites. We had some, you know, not so much
sure.
on the favorite end, but we just learned a lot from every single one of them. And we'd ask bartenders, you know, what they thought about working for that brewery. If we could talk to the owners, we did.
Okay.
We just looked at, you know, what their tap room looked like, what their environment felt like. And and we didn't even go into it with the, you know, expectation that we would start a brewery. We just went into it with, you know, the idea that we just wanted to sample what they had to offer.
Yeah, that's like it's kind of a Colorado thing. It seems like if you go to almost any town in Colorado or any city, you can go to at least one local brewery, right? I mean, it seems like no matter where you go, it's kind of like a fun thing to do if you just find yourself in a part of Colorado. So that was kind of how you got into it, as far as, you know, it was this fun thing that you guys did together. And but then tell me a little bit about how it transitioned into a business.
You know, one of the main things that we learned when we went to all these other breweries is that consistency and quality is just so important. And a lot of the newer breweries that had opened up when we went on this tour, consistency seemed to be a major challenge for them. And so that's why we kind of looked at the resources that we had. And Kyle's parents live in Greeley, and they have a horse barn. And so we purchased a couple fermenters, 7-barrel fermenters, even though we were still homebrewing.
Uh-huh.
And we had our pilot system, you know, this like 20-gallon pilot system. And so we just brewed, tried to learn how to brew on a commercial scale way before we opened. Okay. So Kyle, we were probably, I think, 24 at the time, 24 years old. And, you know, Kyle had mentioned, you know, I really want to do this. And, you know, at that point in time, I said, this sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were 24. This is, you know, the financial situation, you know, mortgage crisis, all that.
Yeah.
So getting a loan at 24.
Yeah.
we knew that would be a challenge.
Right.
And so, you know, based on, you know, we both had, you could say, corporate jobs, you know, we kind of survived, you know, through that. And we decided on our own to be self-financed.
Okay.
And so we basically lived on one income for 5 years.
Okay.
If you can imagine, for five
that
years.
That would be, yeah.
And so we technically formed, you know, what is now Wiley Roots in 2009 and very, very patiently waited until we, you know, had enough money saved to then finally open in 2013.
Okay.
My initial plan, I worked in higher education before this and, you know, really loved my job, really loved my career. And, you know, it was just kind of something that the more that we, you know, dove into planning the brewery, it was just, you know, oh, I'd like to be a part of this. To eventually it was, I felt like I have to be a part of this.
Yeah.
And so the plan was never for me to leave my job first. It just kind of worked out that way.
Oh, okay.
So I ended up leaving my job. And so I run the tap room and the business operations. And Kyle, you know, kept on at his job in Denver. And so we were open for a year and a half and he commuted to Denver and then brewed, you know, kegged off beer at nights and on the weekends till we could basically afford for him to quit his job.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was definitely quite a go, but that's kind of how it transitioned from, you know, being a hobby, you know, into something else.
You guys started like really strong. You kind of you won some awards at the Brewfest in Denver right away.
Yeah, we to meet the deadline for the Great American Beer Festival because we had planned on opening mid-July. We opened before the end of June.
Oh, okay.
For just like a couple of days, just so we could meet the deadline. And then in, I think it was in September, we won the bronze, for the Super 77 American Wheat. And, you know, winning the first time, it just, you know, you're in this room of thousands of people and, you know, you doubt yourself, you know, who's to say, you know, I'm any good at this, or, you know, you're just in front of your colleagues that, you know, they're famous, you know,
right,
to you. And so you're like, you think in your mind, how is what we're doing remotely on the same level as what they're doing? So to win a bronze, I mean, literally, I can't even describe how awesome that was. And then, you know, the following year, you know, we didn't win a medal. And so, you know, I think feeling that, you know, it's just, wow, this is truly a once in a lifetime accomplishment. And then to win the gold medal for the same beer, this year, I can't even describe how that feels to be so proud of that beer. And that beer specifically, I don't know if you know the backstory on that beer,
no.
But that beer just means a lot to me, you know, and my family. My family immigrated from Russia before the Bolshevik Revolution.
Okay.
And they, you know, they worked long hours in a coal factory, a brickyard, saved enough money to open a farm in Milliken, which is where my family's farm is today. And basically they farmed by hand for an entire generation.
Wow.
And the first tractor they could afford to buy was the Super 77.
Okay.
So, you know, I came from those, you know, entrepreneurial roots and, you know, had that growing up and, you know, with my family. And so I loved that we got to name that beer after something that was just such a part of, you know, who I am and growing up.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. To think about brewing that beer with that in mind and like putting the label on and it's got that, you know, and that's a pretty incredible journey for an idea.
True.
And a family journey, and it's all kind of wrapped up in that one thing. That's really great.
Yeah. But I would definitely say to win a medal for anything, you know, the commitment to quality and consistency is just so key. But to, you know, win a second medal for that beer, it just really confirmed that, you know, this wasn't luck. This wasn't, right, you know, right, chance, you yeah. know, that we somehow ended up with this medal, that this really is a solid beer. And, you know, to be recognized by, you know, people that do this for a living is just incredible.
Yeah, it would seem, I could see what you're saying, maybe, because it's like, you know, in the Olympics, it's sort of the beer Olympics, except for it's almost the Olympics of an art, where yeah. it's kind of harder to have specific guidelines. You know, in the Olympics, so-and-so crossed the line first, so they won. But with something artistic like this, it's harder to say what's better. And so to win twice is a pretty big deal.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think that's pretty amazing. So for people who live kind of outside of the, especially the immediate area, you know, Colorado and Northern Colorado has become this real mecca of craft brewing. There's a lot of breweries and a lot of smaller breweries and that kind of thing. So what is it about the area that has caused such a boom here?
I would definitely say water quality. You know, some of the other breweries in other states have to spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on a water treatment system, you know, just to be, you know, at the level of what our water is like in, you know, Colorado or Northern Colorado. Definitely, I think the culture, you know, people are used to taking a weekend or going on trips to go see breweries, and, you know, people have goals to travel to as many as they can and, you know, try really out there unique styles. I think the, you know, the culture of craft beer, people are willing to try new things where, you know, certain products, people aren't going to see a beer on the, you know, or see an item on the shelf and take a chance on it. Where with craft beer, people do. People, oh, I've never heard of that brewery, or, oh, I've never tried that beer from them. I've liked everything else they've come out with, but I've not had that beer. And so people are more willing to take a chance, you know, with their $8, $10, $12. I would say as a whole, definitely our distribution laws in Colorado, the fact that we can self-distribute our beer is just so important, you know, that we're able to go to our, you know, local family-owned liquor store and show them our product, you know, have them try what we have to offer. And, you know, we're able to compete at the same level as some of the macro brands, even though as of right now, we're still hand bottling. So.
Right. So you're able to actually brew the beer, load it up, and take it to the liquor store just all yep. yourselves.
Yeah, and a lot of other states are, you That's know, amazing. They're not in that situation.
Yeah, if you ever wanted to go to a place where the distance from where the beer is made to where you would drink it is very yep. short. If you're like someone who likes to farm to table and yep. know where it came from, this is the place to be.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. People have been really understanding about it, especially when they see all the things that, you know, when you sure. walked in, we had that pallet,
yeah.
you know, of all the brewing equipment moving through the tap room.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know, maybe that's part of the experience too of, you know, when you go to a brewery in a tap room, that's maybe some of the difference because if you go to, you know, one of the big ones and they have their tours and stuff, you are not going to see somebody coming through with spent grain or something like that or doing that kind of
yeah.
stuff. You know, it's part of the it feels like you're very close to what's happening here.
Definitely.
When you're in here, which is something I think is really cool.
Thank you.
So there was a profile of Wiley Roots in 5280 magazine, which is kind of like a lifestyle magazine from the area. And it's a really short, it was kind of recommending Wiley and some other breweries, and it talked about Wiley, and it was a little less complimentary of Greeley, which is the city where you're based, where we are right now. So I'm going to read this and then ask a question about it. Driving through Greeley, you often get a whiff of, well, you know. But today, the aromas of hops and barley fill the air around the University of Northern Colorado. So I'm a Greeley native myself. And, you know, I have no problem saying that Greeley has a well-earned reputation for being a cow town. But when you meet other people from Colorado cities, you know, they'll often think of Greeley as that smelly place and all that kind of stuff. So do you feel like it's been tougher coming into the beer scene from Greeley as opposed to Fort Collins or Boulder or Denver or something like that?
Absolutely. And I don't know if you've read the Beer Advocate. They had a class of 2015, and they had a very similar article about Weldworks.
Okay.
And so absolutely, I think, I'm not going to speak for, you know, the other breweries in Greeley, but absolutely, I think we felt that way that, you know, we are trying to put Greeley on the map. I would say not even try. We have put Greeley on the map along with our colleagues. If you look at, you know, 50% of the breweries in our city won a medal at the Great American Beer Festival. I don't know the statistics, but I'm assuming a lot of cities could not say that. And so I think that mindset or coming into Greeley with that expectation actually shows a very outdated, you know, idea of what Greeley is coming out with. And so, you know, we do get that from time to time. You know, someone comes in the tap room or interviews us or, you know, talks to us. And to me, it just shows that they have no idea or, you know, they have no idea what great things we are doing in Greeley, you know. And it's a commitment, like I said, to quality and consistency that, you know, the five or six of us, we're all of, you know, the breweries are, we're trying to do that, and we have done that, and we're winning medals, we're winning on a national level. And so I'm hoping that those, you know, articles can start to showcase that and, you know, talk about what we're doing and, you know, not mention manure in the same sentence.
Particular. I mean, people either love sours or really don't like sours.
This is Don Wood, co-chair of the Wyoming Brewers Festival, who just happened to be at the brewery working with Kyle on making one of the hottest styles in beer right now, sour beer. Whether it's a Berliner Weiss, Goza, or sour IPA, these beers are popping up everywhere, and Wiley has quickly made a name for itself with its mastery of this sometimes polarizing style.
I'm a big sour fan,
yeah.
And so for me, this is a little more of a passion project for me to be like, no, I have a say, and so therefore we're going to have sour.
That's how everything gets done, right?
I can do it. And I'm in charge.
Cool.
But that's one of the things that we're trying to work on, and our goal for this is to make a approachable sour,
right?
Kind of bridge that gap, and not have those sours you drink and go, oh, it's really good, but oh, I'll stick
super
with the
dry,
one, and
yeah,
I'm gonna move on to something else. And so when I told that to Kyle, he's like, yeah. I said, you know, it's June, we tend to have really nice weather, let's get something nice and sessionable.
Yeah.
The people go through the line, they get their pour, take the sip and immediately go back to the back of the line.
Awesome.
To hit another pour on.
Can you tell us a little bit more, like, from the insider perspective, like, what is that brewery community like? And how has that been for you guys? Supportive? And
I think, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, that's one of the reasons why we were drawn to this industry, is just how collaborative it is, and people are willing to share ideas and, you know, concepts. And thankfully, we've been able to do that on a local level, you know, with the other breweries in town, as well as other businesses. We've, you know, created a lot of collaboration beers with products that they create, whether it's tea, you know, things like that. We've also, you know, worked with other breweries, thankfully, now in Denver and, you know, Loveland. And so I think it's just a great way for us to, you know, learn from them. They can learn from us. And it's not, you know, just about the technical product that we're making, but just
sure,
the concept and, you know, the styles that we're brewing, you know, the way that we're, you know, sharing that message with everyone else.
Sure. Yeah, it seemed a lot to me, outsider perspective, that, you know, this industry is a lot more all in it together than some others I've seen. It seems
I think as a craft, we have to be,
yeah,
you know, we're, I think, you know, Dogfish Head, they talked about that we're fighting for pennies, and, you know, compared to the macro brands, we want to be in it together, because, you know, we're we're creating this really unique product, and you know, we're not necessarily able to compete on price or volume. We're competing on the unique and specialty things that we're doing. So why would we take away from another brand in our own city that's coming out with something special and unique?
Right.
We're going to support that just like they support us.
Right. That's awesome. So are there any particularly interesting characters you've met in this line of work? And
yeah, I asked Kyle that question, and he definitely wanted me to share. He went on a road trip, if you will, last month to Jester King, and you know, got to camp, you know, on their actual brewery, you know, grounds, and he got to camp with basically the guys from New Belgium, and you know, just to be able to be in the same room as that, again, kind of what I mentioned with being around, you know, in our world, it's famous people,
right?
You know, to be around Peter Bukart and you know, his family, it's just he was just awestruck, I think, to again, kind of what I mentioned, just how are we remotely in the same, you know, game is what they're doing, you know,
right,
in terms of quality. And it's just, it's really special to be around your heroes in that way.
Yeah, it seems like you know, you guys have kind of your own subset of heroes in this industry that probably, I'm thinking of, do you ever watch Parks and Recreation?
Yeah.
And Ron Swanson goes to like a woodworking convention and he's like, oh my goodness, that's so and so, you know, he made this amazing chair. And it seems a little like that, where you've got these heroes that most people probably don't really know about, but that you guys and other people in that community are big fans of. Have you found those heroes to be, is that a good experience, meeting those heroes?
Definitely. I think initially you want to ask them for an autograph, and you just subtly remind yourself, friends don't ask friends for autographs. But, you know, it's definitely special that, you know, in our industry, just, you know, whether it's, you know, acting or whatever industry it is, entertainment, you have people that, you know, really stand out and, you know, make a product such as a film or, you know, beer, that, you know, it influences you. You know, before you join this industry, you taste their product and, you know, you learn from them. And so to be around them is just extra special.
So has getting involved in the business of brewing and beer and all that stuff, has that changed your relationship with beer since that started? Do you feel ever like, oh geez, beer around me that I don't want around me? Or,
well, I, you know, we go around to other breweries, we try to go to other breweries as often as we can, and we try, you know, really, at, you know, off the wall types of beers or styles. And you know, we know from doing this as a business how hard it is to, you know, create that, you know, that specialty beer. And so we appreciate it, I think, that much more when we find something that just, you know, blows your mind. It's just such a specialty type product.
So it's changed your relationship, but in a positive way. I mean, it's been a good change, your relationship with beer.
Oh, definitely. I wouldn't say that at the end of our day, you know, we sit down at the bar and, oh,
right,
another beer. I don't want to drink our own beer. I mean, it's definitely not like that.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
We definitely still drink our own products.
Good. What would you say to, you know, if there's somebody who isn't a huge fan of beer but is kind of interested in it, what would be kind of a gateway for them maybe to getting into it?
I would say just, if you're willing to try anything.
Yeah.
When we started that trip, I had, you know, style preferences.
Sure.
But I, you know, required myself to try everything. And
right,
sure enough, my palate adjusted. I started to enjoy different styles. And at this point, I'll drink anything. I enjoy any and all styles. And when we have customers that'll come into the tap room, you know, even if they don't like it, just that they're willing to try something new, I praise them for that, you know, and just
right,
say, good job, you know, you tried something new. That's all I can ask. That's all I can ask of any of our customers is,
right,
you know, try something. If you try something enough times, your palate, I think, will eventually adjust.
That makes sense. Are you still a wine fan?
I am, but I probably haven't had wine in probably 6 to 9 months.
Wow.
So we have a chocolate porter that was aged in a wine barrel, so that's as close as I've come to wine. But
it's bringing back those phantom memories of
yeah.
I'm Okay, I have one more big question for you.
Sure.
So I have a downstairs neighbor who brews a lot of beer at home, which we know because, you know, when he's brewing and he's boiling things and stuff like that, it wafts up into the upstairs apartment. And so, you know, he does a lot of it. And, you know, we've talked to him a lot, and he'd love to do that for a living. He'd love to do that. So what advice would you give for somebody looking to kind of make that transition into a bigger world of brewing? Like, what surprised you about this business, and what do you wish someone had told you is maybe the best way I can ask that question?
Well, I definitely, if someone, you know, gave me all the advice in the world, I wouldn't have changed my decision, which is, I guess, a good thing to say. But you know, it really is a culture and a lifestyle. And, you know, as much as I mentioned how much we financially prepared for this, and, you know, we did the best that we could, but, you know, emotionally, you know, you go from an office job, you know, I had a corner office in downtown Denver, you know, to, you know, bartending and, you know, just wearing different hats. And, you know, I think emotionally, it's hard. It's really hard to have, you know, your product in front of someone. They're tasting it and drinking it in front of you and, you know, rating it. And, you know, it really takes a strong person to engage with them, hear if they don't like a certain aspect of your product and not take it personally, but still be confident in yourself to know what you need to change, but also know what you're doing really, really well. And, oh, maybe they just, you know, don't know, you know. Yeah.
So kind of hearing that feedback and being able to evaluate it non-emotionally, even though the product is emotional, even though
absolutely.
It's an important thing.
And I think it takes a special person to be in that situation. You know, I also think that, you know, it's not as lucrative as, you know, as people may lead other people to believe. It's, you know, and I read something to myself. There was this blog. It was either 8 or 10 pieces of advice for entrepreneurs. And I read it to myself whenever I'm having a really rough day. But, you know, there's one person that you get to know better than anybody else, and that's yourself when you open your own business. And, you know, you think you work really hard before, but when you do it for yourself, you know, any excuses that you have, you know, you can't blame anything on anybody. If something isn't the way that it's supposed to be, there's one person, and that's you. And I don't think that's for everybody.
That's great.
I mean, it's not, I mean, I don't want to mean to make it sound, I'm trying to be realistic that I don't mean to discourage anyone. You know, we have a lot of people that come in the tap room that, you know, are doe-eyed and were where we were several years ago. And, you know, I just try to tell them, you know, or first of all, if they ask for advice, I'll definitely share my opinion with them. But, you know, it really is, I think, so Kyle and I, we just took off a couple of days together. The last time we had days off together was in July. So okay. To give you an idea of, you know, we're here all the time. We work all the time. We don't have children, so I can't imagine opening your own business or brewery with children. I can't even imagine what that would be like. But it is all-consuming in every way. And, I mean, if you don't love it, you're very quickly going to burn out because, you know, energy, emotions, that's gonna get you through about the first 6 months. And then this is my life. And, you know, you're doing the best that you can. And I think you have to be confident and believe in yourself. I mean, that's really what I would say. If you believe in yourself and, you know, that's the kind of person that's going to be successful being an entrepreneur.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Weldcast. If you would like more information about the project or you would like to participate, please visit our website at weldcast.com. or by calling 1-888-861-7323. This has been a production of the High Plains Library District.